the easiest systems to build are the least secure. We want to connect AI to everything, trust it with our sensitive data because of its promise, and its promise is true. But if we don't manage to secure it, it will create a lot of harms.
My guest today is Rob Vanderveer, Chief AI Officer at Software Improvement Group and a global leader in AI security, software engineering, and international AI standards. With more than 30 years of experience in artificial intelligence, Rob has played a leading role in developing industry standards while also serving as co-editor of the forthcoming European AI security standard supporting the EU AI Act. He is the founder of the OWASP AI Exchange, co-founder of OpenCRE, and has helped bring together standards organizations, industry, and the open source community to advance practical approaches to secure AI. In this conversation, we'll explore how organizations can build trustworthy AI in an era of rapidly evolving technology and regulation. We'll discuss AI security, threat modeling, international standards, the challenges posed by agentic AI, and why collaboration across a global AI ecosystem is becoming essential. Rob brings a unique perspective from both the technical and standards world, making him an ideal guide to one of the most important conversations in AI today. Rob, it's a real honor to have you. Thank you for being on the show today.
It's great to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, we had a little chat before the show, and I can tell there's some good things coming. So I always like to start with how people got to where they are. You've been working in AI for more than 30 years. What initially drew you to the field, especially before, you know, the modern hype around it?
I was a computer geek, always was, still am, and very interested in robots and science fiction. And when I did my master's in computer science, there were some courses on neural networks and expert systems. And I just wanted to learn more about how we can make computers more intelligent. And that fascinated me. So I chose that direction of the education and did my final internship at the first AI company in the Netherlands called Sentient Machine Research. That was in 1991. I built a system, an AI system that later became the flagship product of the company. And I joined the company and I was a data scientist, a programmer, a researcher, a CTO, and later became the CEO of the company.
Oh, wow. He made it all the way to the top.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure whether that is the best place always. I learned some hard lessons, but sure. In a way, yes.
That's such an interesting career path given where we are today. You know, I was thinking about Alan Turing the other day and how the Turing test for determining whether AI had reached general intelligence has kind of become lost along the way because it would be passed so easily today.
Indeed. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So I guess looking back over your 30-year career and where we are today, what surprised you the most about how AI has evolved?
I was definitely surprised by what happened after Attention Is All You Need, 2017, really revolutionary work by researchers introducing the transformer architecture, which in the end led to generative AI and LLMs. But it's mostly, I guess, skill and the effect of it that surprised me, because there's Moore's law, you know, twice the amount of computation for half the price every year, which sounds like this is okay. Yeah, this is probably going very big. But in the early days, we really needed to put together a whole bunch of computers to be able to train one small neural network with just a couple of neurons on 1,000 example sets with 8 features. That was quite big back then. And we needed to wait two entire days for that network to train. And now we can train a neural network on the internet. That's just mind-boggling. And what you can do with it, it's not just a word predictor, right? Because if you need a neural network to predict the word, if that word needs to be accurate, you need understanding of the world. And that's actually what we're building, systems with an understanding of the world. And it has amazed everybody, of course, including me.
Yeah, and I find it really fascinating the way that reasoning sort of emerged from the scaling of these systems, because ultimately that wasn't something that was cooked into the models the way they were built. They just noticed that as it was scaled up, that there's sort of emergent properties were coming out of it. Is that correct in my assumption?
Yes, indeed. And especially if you then start to go into loops and steps. Mm-hmm. The first step is making a plan and then dividing that and executing it, which sort of, again, amplifies the intelligence of the entire agentic system, which was, again, a surprise to many people how emergent the intelligence was, and also how sometimes stupid the intelligence was, right? I mean, yeah. Advising you to walk to the car wash because it's so close. At one point, at another point, it refactors your entire software system. It's jagged intelligence, right? That's what it's called.
Yeah, and I find it interesting too, because you mentioned the exponential growth, Moore's law, which I think is actually 18 months instead of a year, but small detail.
Oh, yes.
So I'm a big believer in that, and I think that human brains are not very good at actually understanding how exponential growth grows. Like, our brains aren't built for that kind of thing. And some of the people I talk to about it say, no, it can never get like that because, you know, we're going to hit these theoretical limits in the way we're able to train these models and stuff. But I always lean into, like you mentioned with the loops and stuff, there's an engineering aspect in all this capital being poured in. Like, I think we still are able to grow exponentially for years and years to come before we hit any real limits.
Yes, and bigger models help us go into that direction, but they don't solve the problem,
mm-hmm.
right? The sort of the consensus with the big thinkers in this, of which I'm not part, but I listen to a lot of people who are building generative AI technology and taking it further and further, is they're saying, we need a different reasoning model. We need a more hybrid model, a different model that extends the more system one thinking, associative thinking of generative AI with a more rational process of reasoning. And some experiments in that direction are promising. And I think that's, by the way, that was the topic of my master's thesis, hybrid intelligence. It was no way near where we are right now, but the idea of combining associative technology with more rule-based and rational technology was already a thing back then.
Interesting. Yeah, I remember very early on I built a RAG system, and my intuition tells me there's something very important about the way these models work with memory to get better performance, at least as they apply to real-world tasks and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever imagine AI would become as mainstream as it is today? I know when I studied computer science, I never thought I would be hosting a podcast. So there's been lots of surprises for me.
Yeah, it's quite a change. I was always sort of the weird nerdy guy when bringing up these AI subjects, and actually clients didn't like it, the whole artificial intelligence idea. They felt it was scary. But nowadays, everybody's talking about it. My friends at sports, my family members. It's become a commodity and as a topic, but also as a tool. Everybody's using it. I didn't expect that.
Since I have you, I'd love to lean into some of your specialties so we can get that knowledge out to our listeners.
Mm.
We hear the terms AI safety, AI security, and AI governance used interchangeably. How do you define the differences between those?
Yeah, so to me, AI governance is about controlling the controlling. It's more of a management system for organizations that involves policies, responsibilities, procedures, rules. It's a whole process thing to manage AI, and it involves everything that is about risks and about opportunities. Very important. It's not just about managing risks. It's also about driving AI to give business value, to give efficiency, to make life and business better. That's also part of AI governance. People sometimes forget that. Then there's safety, which is about harm to individuals. The AI Act, for example, in Europe is about safety, health, and fundamental rights. And then there's security, which is more about adversaries trying to manipulate AI systems, their behavior, or extracting data, sensitive data. That's the security part. And sometimes they overlap in a way. Like, for example, when you talk about model safety, is about making sure that the model doesn't provide harmful content, either offensive or maybe content that can be used to induce harm, like recipes for napalm or poison or whatever. That's often called AI safety. But trying to circumvent these safety measures through adversaries, protecting against that, that's when it becomes security. So that's where safety and security, in my view, overlap.
Yeah, and what an interesting time to be talking about AI security, because if we look at what just happened with Hugging Face and OpenAI the other day, which I'll be talking about in detail with another guest on the show shortly, it's not just human threat actors anymore. It's the models themselves become security risks when they're running in the environment.
Yes, proactively, indeed, and also as an augmentation of humans. The silver lining is that if an AI can find weaknesses in your system and attack them, as a defender, you can use the same technology to help detect these vulnerabilities and protect against them. So in a way, it's also leveling the playing field. Previously, you needed a whole group of smart people. I needed to mobilize, to motivate, to pay them, train them, if you wanted to do real harm. And now you need some smart people, obviously, but with AI. And that is giving you the benefit. But the nice thing, in a way, is that defenders also can have access to that AI. So the playing field is actually leveling more, contrary to what many people say, that we're all doomed because adversaries now have AI. I'd like to think, look at this more from a positive angle.
Right. Positive for the people selling tokens, for sure.
Yeah, but then you need to look at the business case there, I guess. But tokenomics is a whole thing in itself, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that there's any, you know, widely held misconceptions about AI security today?
Yes. One of my important lessons this year is that this is no era to be bothering people with risks, because they're mostly focused on reaping benefits. That's no situation to be warning people. They're not open to it. And I appreciate that. But it's something for security folks and people worried about risks to take into account, because that means that leaders are best helped by people that show them that paying attention to the things that are dangerous and can, you know, set you back is actually making you faster. It needs to be about speed. So it needs to be about reaching your destination earlier, because you know where the obstacles are, because you can avoid doing rework, because you can avoid driving down the wrong alley and having to turn back again and sort of abandoning an idea because it didn't work. If you would know the obstacles beforehand, you can prevent that. So if we talk more in that way about security, I think we can work around that misconception that security is only delaying, because if you know your obstacles, you can actually reach your destination faster. That would be, I think, the main misconception. Second thing I want to mention is the misconception that you need shortlists. Of course, you need shortlists to pay attention to stay sane, but there's many things that can be threatening your AI system. Just start with those many things, then break them down using threat modeling, using risk analysis to a short list that matters to you. But start big, don't start small.
That's interesting. I can tell you're an optimist the way that you talk about these things. My partner and I recently had a conversation that was, I think, quite some insight on his part, where you know, in the short term, things are going to be fairly bad because we're having AI looking at all this code that's been written by humans over the last, you know, I don't know what would be in production, 20, 30 years kind of thing. And so it's surfacing all of these vulnerabilities and able to exploit them. But in very short order, stuff should be written and reviewed and secured by AI. And hopefully we come to an equilibrium in the not too distant future. Do you think that's where things will head eventually?
It's hard to predict what equilibrium that will be, but definitely the current vulnerability storm is a one-time thing, right? It's sort of, we're making up for all that technical depth that can now be revealed. Indeed, I share that view. The effort that organizations now need to put in automating patching and triage and building in containment and resilience and improving incident response, that doesn't happen overnight. So in order to deal with, you know, the really short time now between a zero day and an exploit, that sort of has imploded, requires organizations to take action, and that will take some time. So there's going to be some harm.
One of the terms that gets thrown around a lot in relation to AI and security these days is prompt injection. I'm very fascinated by this because, as I understand it from a computer science point of view, it's actually impossible to fully secure against. Do you have any thoughts or comments on prompt injection as part of the threat model for AI? And is there any way forward to sort of secure systems against it?
Yeah, it's theme number one. I'd like to think of it as social engineering of AI. You're just fooling it in all kinds of ways. And people can always be social engineered, no matter how smart they are. And large language models, same thing. So there's no solid protection there, not in detection, not in blast radius prevention. So you need a whole layer. At the AI Exchange, we have a seven-layer model that shows you everything you can do against prompt injection. And none of these layers are silver bullets and recipes, but together they help you to mitigate it. It's really a big issue, especially indirect prompt injection, because we're injecting all kinds of data and give it to LLMs. I mean, look at this website, look at this PDF, look at this issue that a customer filed. That filed issue may contain hidden instructions or instructions that are read differently and then make the agent do things. The crazy thing is that if that issue is read into the workspace of a developer, the agent operates with the privileges of that developer. So the sort of command execution happens with the privileges of the developer. And I think that's threat number one for AI.
That's interesting. I just had a bit of a thought around trying to think about agents segmented the way we do network segmentation, just to prevent the blast radius of potential compromise in these situations.
100%. That's the solution direction. That is the cutting edge. How you do that and how you do it dynamically, because agents have different intent every cycle. So you want to harden it based on that intent, but it's not pre-programmed. So you need to do it dynamically, but you don't want to do it too strict, because then it will say, computer says no, and we don't want that. And that's the tricky thing with agentic AI. The most powerful agentic AI system, the most pleasant agentic AI system is the one that has no hardening, because it always works. It never says permission denied. So we tend to sort of open up all those privileges just to prevent that. But we should do the contrary.
Interesting. So one of the other things you've been involved with is writing international AI standards at a very high level. This is something I know is probably very hard in this fast-moving environment, and also something that I know, like, people operating organizations sometimes have gripes about. Why do standards matter so much in this field that's changing so quickly?
You need to set the bar sometimes. For example, in in Europe. So in the EU, we have the AI Act that sets a bar for high-risk products coming on the market. Then you need to become normative. So then you need a standard. And the standard I've been working on, which is the 18282, which is currently in public inquiry, that is a normative standard, setting that bar for digital products. And it's been super hard indeed to set that bar because you need to talk in principles because things are changing all the time. But at the same time, be specific and clear enough what you mean. And the interesting thing is that we took an outcome-based approach. You know, there is no clear recipe for securing an AI system. In the end, if you want to demonstrate that your risks have been mitigated, you need to either provide some evidence from the state of the art. We've done this, and it's been proven that if you do that from the state of the art, then the system is secure enough. Or do tests. So tests are becoming increasingly important because they are the way to prove, to demonstrate that your system is secure enough, not the fact that you did rate limiting and I added noise and I added detection. Now it's secure. No, you really need to measure it because it's different for every use case. Those AI systems are super stochastic, statistic in a way, hard to predict what works and what doesn't. So you need to provide the evidence. And being more specific about tests, that is what we can do. So we're focusing on that.
Interesting. And I'm assuming these tests will be made available in a low cost public way so that you know, people trying to start businesses and innovate are able to access them.
Yeah, if only we had those tests ready and running. The biggest issue here is that the state of the art in AI red teaming leaves something to be desired. That's not because of the people that are working on it, because these people are great and they're working hard. It's just the fact that we're keeping up with threats, with technology development. Everybody's busy building these harnesses and these tests. And we try to be so specific about them in the standard as possible, but we can't give you the exact recipes. And that's going to be a search for the coming time. So the assessments of these systems are going to be pretty complex. And I predict that the assessments need some leniency, some flexibility in the coming time to accommodate for the fact that the state of the art is developing.
Yeah, it's so not unnerving. I don't know what the right word is to represent how I'm feeling. But it does change so incredibly fast. You know, I think about, you know, where we were a year ago to now and the way the capabilities evolved. I can't imagine trying to create standards and rules for how to harness that in a way that's going to keep people safe.
Well, it's surprisingly stable on a principle level. So right. If you look at so my first public talk on AI security is from 2022. If I listen to it, I hear nothing that's outdated.
Interesting.
I hear technology preferences that, I mean, I don't hear the word agentic, but I have some examples where agents are mentioned, but I just don't mention the word. So it sounds outdated because it doesn't mention the buzzwords, but the principles, they're still intact.
You've used the phrase "kill your darlings" when talking about standards. Can you expand on that and tell us what it looks like in practice?
Yeah, I can give you an example. There's a big need for guidance. So you have standards, right, that are normative. You have standards that are going to provide guidance. And there's a need for both. Normative ones to set the bar in legislation, the guiding ones to help practitioners to secure their AI systems for all kinds of risks. And many people are working on them. NIST is working on them, MITRE, multiple projects at OWASP, the Coalition of Secure AI, SANS Institute, CSA, CIS, ISO, you name it. And everybody's working in their own attic, basically typing those standards. And it's for a good cause. But the problem is we're proliferating and there are gaps and inconsistencies and no shared taxonomy. and sometimes quality issues, which ironically and sadly creates more confusion now. Now, if we want to solve this, we need to correct for what's missing. Shared goals, shared principles, transparency, who's doing what, and coordination. What do we mean by agentic AI? What do we mean by threat? There's still discussion about what we mean by threat. And we just need to agree on it. And to agree on things means killing your darlings. Because if you've built a framework, and we built one called the OWASP AI Exchange Essentials, and for example, SANS Institute built one, the critical guidelines. And we have a partnership with SANS Institute from the AI Exchange. And we felt we're partners, but we have different frameworks. We're creating confusion. We should align these things. So we sat together, and that was hard because long-held opinions needed to be let go and in order to come to consensus. And that's what I mean with killing your darlings. If you have a standard and you tread outside of that scope with a piece that you really worked hard on, but then you learn, there's a much better resource there. Maybe I should just throw away that work and refer to it. That's a sacrifice. That's killing your darlings. And it's tough. I find it tough, I have to admit. But we need to start doing that and aligning things more for the real purpose here, which is the practitioner being able to make sense of it all.
Yeah, that's a very high human quality, humility and grace to throw away something that you've developed in favor of the greater good. So I definitely think that's something we should all aspire to. Mm-hmm. From what you're saying, it sounds like collaboration between many different organizations is sort of fundamental to future success here.
Yeah, and in order to facilitate that, we brought together a number of those organizations. I mentioned some of them in Washington in April. And we sat together and we agreed that the purpose here of our work needs to really make us prioritize collaboration and killing the darlings and creating transparency. So we created a collaboration initiative called Mosaic, Multi-Organization Secure AI Coordination. And in that group, we now have 8 institutes, including NIST, including Coalition of Secure AI, including the AI Exchange, trying to establish shared terminology, trying to be transparent about the different work streams that we have. And we want to involve more people, more organizations, agreeing to a charter that we're currently establishing with principles like we value practitioner clarity over individual initiative success, which is, it's a step. Things won't change overnight. This requires pivoting of these organizations, including my organization, the AI Exchange, to a different model. We're setting the first steps.
Would the Frontier Labs be involved in this kind of work, or is this stuff aimed more at people consuming those and bringing products into the world, or is this up and down the whole ladder?
Labs are a part of Coalition of Secure AI.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just read, I think it's called The Scaling Curve, about Anthropic and some of the internal safety strategies that they take and how important they declare it to be to their organization. But it sounds like there's very different views amongst the major Frontier Labs about how they're approaching these things. So it's good to hear that there's some cross-pollination here. As AI becomes more autonomous, what responsibilities do you think should remain with humans? I know in our coding practice, we seem to be doing more and more without human intervention. And, if that trend continues, I wonder at where humans need to stay versus where they can go.
I think this is not an easy thing to answer, if you ask me, because some people would say creativity. But these models are pretty creative. I wrote a children's book about AI, and the motto of the book was from AI. I admit it. It's just, it was a collaboration where you really could not say the things that I needed to do and the things that AI needed to do. One thing is for sure, it's different for every use case. It's different for every workflow. But the gist of it, if you ask me, is that the accountability is with the human, which means that the human needs to design the way that you get the assurance for the accountability. I'm a consultant. I see my profession moving much more to an analysis role, from an analysis role to a review role, and designing review strategies that ensure that we are accountable and take responsibility for the end result. So making sure that the quality is there and defining how that should be done, that is at least the main thing, if you ask me, that humans should do.
We're getting close to the end here. I have a couple more for you.
Yeah,
it goes fast. I know. What advice would you give to somebody beginning a career in AI security today?
Don't expect everybody requiring you to understand everything about AI. That creates too much stress and it's impossible. Mm-hmm. And if you're a security person, you won't be able to understand everything about AI security. I'm an AI security generalist by choice, right? Because of my role in the standardization and recommending organizations in their change programs in order to incorporate AI in their existing way of working. But I think the majority of what we need is people who specialize in specific parts of AI security. Pick the part that you like, that suits you. If you're good in math, you may be great in training and fine-tuning models. If you're a linguist, well, maybe just the same thing. But if you're really a sort of an attacker mindset person, hacker type of person, it's much better to sort of get an overview of those mathematical input attacks and the defenses, but not dive too deep in them. Dive deeper into how to threat model, etc. So pick the thing that you like and focus on that.
That's great advice. I remember in university when I started, the first couple of years I tried to learn everything and it just drove me into the ground. And I quickly realized that you just had to pay attention to what the professor was saying and study that.
Yeah. Yeah, the curse of curiosity, I guess.
Yeah, right. Okay, so 5 years from now, what do you hope that we have gotten right about AI?
That we can indeed make it a success. And that we've been able to make sense of how to secure it and to apply the discipline that that requires. The easiest systems to build are the least secure. So we really need to keep an eye on the obstacles. And that's what drives me. We want to connect AI to everything, trust it with our sensitive data because of its promise. And its promise is true. But if we don't manage to secure it, it will create a lot of harm. So in 5 years, I hope to see that we've managed to deal with this, or that we're on a good direction to make it.
In order to get there, do you think that's going to involve international cooperation across all countries?
That is my primary activity. So I am Chief AI Officer at Software Improvement Group. I work with a lot of clients, but that's my daytime job. But part of that is working internationally with organizations, building bridges, bringing them together, because I believe that's the only way that we can do this. And so this is a transatlantic cooperation, but I was talking with representatives from Japan recently. There's more parts of this world that we need to involve here. That requires a lot of work. We seem to be very locally oriented. That's our natural tendency. And global collaboration is hard. Look at ISO. I mean, you have calls in every part of the day and night. It's tough, but that's the only way that we're going to make this happen.
Yeah, even just from the game theory perspective, you know, if some parts of the world are operating with self-imposed constraints, they're going to lose, you know, to countries that don't have the same restrictions. So I think we all need to get on board.
Yeah, I'm sad it's already over, man. Thanks a lot. Bye.